trust.
How you doing? This is Ray Winstone, and you're listening to Celluloid Heroes. Crack on.
Hello and welcome to Celluloid Heroes. It is the, what is it today? The
13th?
Yeah, 13th. Wednesday, the 13th of July. And yeah, we've got, well, a pretty small show today. Again, suffering from the pre-big release sort of drought, really. We've got a few things to talk about. We finally got round to doing the Tree of Life, which you saw. I didn't see.
No, I saw it.
We had a review on the website for ages ago, but that was from one of our European correspondents who managed to see it on the continent somewhere. So yeah, we'll have that. I'm going to talk about a Spanish film called Cell 211, which is a sort of prison thing. And related to that, we'll have all your prison tweets that you sent in over the week.
Best and worst.
And we've also got a documentary about chess.
Oh.
Yeah, which we'll talk about. It's called Bobby Fischer Against the World. Mm. I didn't really know anything about Bobby Fischer. All I knew was that he was a famous chess player.
Okay.
Did you know any of the story or what happened to him afterwards or anything?
No, beat your computer.
Okay, well, you're about to learn something. Sit back.
Did he beat your computer?
No, that was someone else. What, Deep Blue are you thinking of?
No, I just know.
No, the computer was called Deep Blue.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Not the film.
So we'll start then. Well, we'll also have the competition. We'll give you a new competition. We won't have a stinker and stonker because yet again,
the
stinker that I gave Ed was not on.
It's not on.
I mean, it's just not on. I suppose it's good that there's been 2 weeks without any crap in the cinema.
Yeah, but...
But it's bad that... So no Quizmaster again now. I'm beginning to sort of miss the sound of his voice.
I'm sadly missing him.
Well, I've heard that he's moved house anyway.
He's moved country.
Yeah, exactly.
That's neither here nor there.
No. Well, we'll crack on then with The Tree of Life. Terrence Malick's new film, which I am very annoyed. I really wanted to try and see it today, but it's very long and I would have missed the beginning of this show.
Well, this is it.
You would have been on your own for the first half an hour.
It would have been a good film for both of us to see because I think we would both have opinions. I think the overall reviews have concluded that it's a split audience.
Yeah, I think
since it came from Cannes.
I think, it's basically been 5-star reviews or sort of 1- and 2-star reviews. But that is always the way with Terrence Malick. He is a sort of polarising filmmaker and he does wear his heart on his sleeve a bit. And some people find that a little bit gooey and hard to take.
He wore everything on his sleeve in this one.
Yeah.
His lungs, his liver, his diaphragm.
All the offal.
Yeah, all the offal was on his sleeve.
Splooging offal all over
the
place.
A rather saggy sleeve. To say the least. But no, I as much as, well, not maybe as much as you, but I was very much looking forward to it. The trailer certainly is like sort of shouted out, I want to see this film. And
did you like the Thin Red Line? And
I love the Thin Red Line. I like Badlands. Though like, it's quite hard watch.
Did you see the new World?
I haven't seen The New World, but maybe I should.
It was a little bit where he started to go a little bit sort of
preaching.
Spiritual and didactic. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
If that's what you don't like about him, then
I think that's where
dangerous.
I think pretty much all critics can agree. I mean, he's made, for someone who's been around for 30 years and made 5 films, critics are up in arms about him. But I think when The New World was the first one where there was a little fork in the road and some people were like, I've had enough of this.
See you later. I'm off.
It's getting a bit, I'm off the bus.
Off here,
yeah,
please.
Exactly.
And some brave people carried on the bus, the Terrence Malick bus. And this this film is very, very spiritual. But I'm going back, I loved The Thin Red Line. I mean, I loved it.
Not to be confused with The Thin Blue Line.
Which is all right. don't confuse it. But The Tree of Life, very excited about it. Came to watch it. Knew it was going to be long, so that wasn't a problem.
Yeah.
But sort of the trailer suggested that this was going to be a piece that went through the life of this boy, Jack, but not just through his childhood, but you know, maybe through his adolescence and then go on to his adult life, where he becomes someone who looks very similar to Sean Penn.
Yeah, sure.
Right, played by Sean Penn, which is great. Yeah. So that's what I was expecting. What I wasn't expecting was as a spiritual account and as a sort of it's not preachy, it's not God. I mean, there certainly is like believing God, and there's certainly an element of, well, you get to see his interpretation of heaven at the end of the film.
Yeah, it's more sort of pagan and spiritual, isn't it?
And I must say, if that is heaven, I don't want to go.
Count
there.
Me out.
Count me out. It looks cold and miserable. That's all I'm going to say. Because I don't want to say any more about. I don't. It's not a spoiler.
Yeah.
But we start. We start right at the beginning of the film. In a sort of. I think there's a montage which lasts about just over an hour.
Okay.
But the montage begins with Brad and.
I don't think you can have a montage that lasts. Is it actually a montage?
Yeah, well, you sort of can.
That's got to be one of the longest montages around.
A very long montage or extremely long screensaver, like an Apple Mac or all other computers.
Yeah.
But generally, they're sort of Apple Mac style screensaver.
Sure.
But it starts off with Jessica and Brad, husband and wife in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, this is probably early 60s. She gets a letter. You realise they have three kids, but then it sort of goes on a bit. They're in a new house. She gets a letter that one of her kids has died in the war.
Mm-hmm.
And he's only 19. It's very sad. And then you go all the way back to the beginning of time.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the montage. So I suppose you could say it's a montage, or you could say it is a slow account of the birth of Earth.
Yeah, sure.
So I think taking a step back from the film, Malick saying, yeah, evolution does exist, but there's a greater power sort of pulling the strings.
Yeah.
Okay. Which is fair enough. And that's what most agnostics, well, a lot of agnostics think.
Mm-hmm.
But so he gets incredible imagery, and he incredible, or whether it's water or fire or water and fire, or like cells compodulating into a being, into a into the first organism, and then you get a bit of dinosaurs, and you get a bit of this, and you get a bit of other, and lost about an hour, and you're like, you're pretty blown away.
Is it
also very operatic music? And I think it's probably Brahms, because Brahms is featured a lot. In fact, Brad Pitt's character is an amateur musician and is a big fan of all these composers. So I imagine, without knowing much about old classical music,
yeah,
I imagine
old people's
they used that those sort of composers. But it was brilliant.
Yeah.
It was great. And what I was hoping for was, like, you know, to obviously slow the pace down quite. Otherwise we'd be in an apocalyptic film before we even realise. But I thought once we got back to the central characters, which was Brad and Jessica, husband and wife, with their three children, and the montage continues to the first really all three sons are born,
mm-hmm.
and then the plot stops, and then the montage, well, I say montage stops, and you get the story, which is about the three kids. Brad Pitt being the father, a very strict father, but at the same time very loving, and Jessica Chastain, who is an extremely loving mother, like overly loving, like the Virgin Mary, let's say, and she is they're both. I mean, it's incredibly well acted film, especially young Jack, who's the eldest son, and he's played by this guy, lovely name called Hunter McCracken, which sounds like a sort of.
Something from Pirates of the Caribbean.
It does, yeah. It's all about the boy's relationship with the family, and this eldest boy, Jack, who is later played by Sean Penn.
Yeah.
How he sort of loses innocence, in one way or another, gets a bit out of hand, and he gets a bit naughty.
I think this is where our clip comes in. Do you want to?
Let's play it.
Where's Dad? He's gone on a trip.
Okay, and that was the most plot-heavy clip that they offer.
It's very hard.
Yeah.
It's very hard to get any sort of plot heavy clip. But that, I mean, I must say that that's obviously the point where Brad Pitt he goes away for a while, mm-hmm. and that's really where Jack's character sort of becomes a bit naughty because he doesn't have
that authoritarian authority,
which he hates. He hates it, and you know, it does really ring bells when you're a kid and you're scared of your dad, and you sometimes hate his authority. And I'm not saying my dad was overly strict, but when you're a young kid, your dad looks scary, mm-hmm. as a man, whether he's in a suit.
Yeah, I met my dad.
But
petrifying.
So that was nice to see. But what I was upset about is the story stays there to the end of the film and until the last, and then there's another sort of 20-minute montage about the rest of life.
Yeah.
At the end, with simply sort of Sean Penn's character in the future is really sort of reflecting on his life. It's just, I think it's more about the imagery of the, mm-hmm. of where this city life, more than anything, using the city imagery as metaphors, whether it's a bridge or whether it's these sort of, I don't know, these glass elevators and all that. Maybe this metaphorical imagery, I not necessarily get it.
Yeah.
So that's why I was disappointed that I wanted to see more of a sort of lifespan. You know, it's the trip.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's actually the main plot and the main part of the film is this period of young Jack's life.
Okay.
And it, as I said, it's very well acted. It's very well shot. It's all, I mean, and as I said earlier, I mean, the imagery when they're going through the motions of evolution, all that, and towards the end, is stunning. I mean, it's absolutely stunning and it's beautiful to watch. Hence, it should be a screensaver. But for me, it was far too abstract, and it was missing that more of a plot for a dumb o like mainstream cinema girl like me. I want a bit more plot, more juiciness.
Do you think that'll be will stop it going for sort of Academy Award status?
Maybe. I mean, maybe it will. Yeah, I think so. I mean, you might be able to squeeze a couple of performance nods. From both Brad and Jessica, and even maybe Hunter McCracken. You know, he does look a bit like a sort of deranged Elijah Wood.
Yeah. Like Elijah Wood. How old is he?
I think he's portraying maybe an 11 or 12 year old.
Okay.
Certainly someone who is not quite a teenager, but he thinks that he wants to act like one. So I thought it was far too abstract. There was also a lot of fidgeting in the cinema.
Yeah.
Which suggests that the majority of my cinema goers, the people who were sitting around me, were feeling that. And I must say,
It's almost nice to see it with an audience like that, though, because you can sort of, if you see it at a press screening, then you do get a lot of people going like, oh, swooning in the aisles.
Yeah,
the
pretentiousness. And I think, again, we're talking about these pretentious films. I think more people would pretend to like this film than actually do like it, which is a shame, because I completely understand people who will like this, and there's a lot to like about this film, and you have to be a Malick fan to like it. But I think some people just go swan in and go out and drink a glass of red wine and go, wasn't that just amazing?
Yeah,
it's
sure.
Like, well, what was amazing, you Bible basher? But I think it was a bit fidgety. There was one guy who came out with his mum and was like, he didn't say anything. He was obviously a Sean Penn fan.
Yeah.
So I felt a bit sad for him. And mum's like, oh, I actually quite liked it. I thought it was really good. I was like, pretentious mum, little brat of a teenager. Bit like the characters in the film. So a bit fidgety. I don't think it's for everyone, but if you're a Malick fan, certainly check it out. And for the imagery alone, it's worth seeing in the cinema. And I must say, the first time I went to one of these, a lot of cinemas have them, but I went to this View cinema, which has these new sort of exclusive screens. There's a sign, someone's getting chased outside.
Dear me, what's going on?
I don't know. Maybe that brat has been arrested for GBH. I don't know, but I think... These new like exclusive screens are amazing. Right, I've got like a Lazy Boy chair.
What are they? Just smaller screens?
Then they're incredibly huge screens.
Oh, right.
Like the smaller auditoriums. Well, the same size auditoriums, just bigger, comfier seats.
Where was this? Westfield.
This is in Westfield.
That's where they have the premieres.
And some premieres. I imagine one of the premieres is in a similar screen I saw.
Yeah.
So that was enjoyable, and certainly for people who wanted to take a little snooze, they really could. Even as comfortable as the cinema was, there were still fidgeters, which suggests that it really isn't for everyone.
And what is it, 2.5?
It's just under 2.5 hours. It feels about 3, to be fair, especially with that long montage at the beginning, if it is a montage. I did like it. I was like, if this carries on like this and then we go through the rest of Jack's life like this, I really enjoy it. But I got stuck in the middle.
Mm, okay.
Like Malcolm.
Fair enough. All right then. Well, I'm sort of more intrigued now to see it because
I think
a lot of people I know people who have come out being like a bit ummy and ahhy about it, and then a few weeks later be like, that was brilliant. Like, but I remember speaking to you. You said it was rubbish.
Yeah. Well, maybe in a few weeks I will.
It's good. I mean, it's good. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. Who knows? But it's good. It's very good for a film like that to polarize people. Yeah. I think.
But I certainly didn't want to put it flat in his face because that would be completely unfair with the amount of time and effort. But it's also no surprise that after making 5 films in 30 years, he's got one coming out next year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's called The Untitled Terrence Malick Project. It's a love story, and it's got Rachel McAdams and Ben Affleck and Jessica Chastain.
Maybe he's finally
going to
pull his finger out.
So maybe that would be an interesting love story. And I mean, I can't say enough how much I loved The Thin Red Line. But yeah, I'm still an atheist.
Okay, for now.
You
have to wait
for
this next one.
Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. Well, I'll talk a little bit before we move on with the rest of the show about a film called Cell 211.
Yes.
And or Zelda Dos Uno Uno,
Dos
if
Uno,
you're Spanish.
Uno.
And this is a film by a guy called Daniel Monzon, who I haven't really heard of. But this film got an incredible amount of buzz in Spain when it opened last year. It won the Goya Award, which is their equivalent of the BAFTAs. It won 8 of them, nominated for 16,
right,
which is one of the best anything's ever done, really.
Okay, so it's a big Spanish film.
Yeah, and it's sort of a prison drama about a guy played by Alberto Amann, who is he's going to be a guard, and he has a wife who's pregnant at home. It's very similar in setup to the film Point Blank that I reviewed a couple of weeks ago. And he wants to be a prison guard because he's got this kid on the way. He's very keen, so he goes into the prison a day early for them to show him around. And so he can sort of get the ropes and be ready for his first day.
Yeah.
And while in there, a prison riot led by a guy called Malamadre, who is played by a guy called Luis Tosar. And people will know him from, he was in that Michael Mann remake of Miami Vice that they did a few years ago.
See that.
He's
a very established guy.
He certainly was, yeah. A bad guy. He wasn't the bad guy. But he's a very well-established Spanish actor.
Okay.
And so while our hero Juan is doing the tour of the prison, a prison riot breaks out and he gets hit on the head by a bit of falling debris and is dragged into cell 211. And when he wakes up, the prisoners have taken over the prison, and he suddenly realizes if they think I'm a guard, they're going to kill me. So he gets rid of his shoelaces and stuff, rips up all his clothes, gets rid of his wedding ring, and then has to pretend that he's a new prisoner who's come in that day and he's been beaten up by the guards.
Okay. So that's quite.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's sort of. After the first 10 minutes, first thing I wrote down was American remake, and. Sure enough, got home on the IMDb. Paul Haggis has bought the rights and the American remake is in the process of being made. And so it opens with this scene. It's told from a sort of like Social Network-esque tribunal flashback style. So all the guards that were involved are giving evidence to a tribunal and then it flashback. But the first scene that we see is someone slitting their wrists very, very graphically.
Typical Spanish. In a
prison sink. And it made me feel sick. And I was sort of like, okay, this is, you know what you're getting yourself in for here. It's,
I think the last Spanish film you saw was about Killer
Clowns.
Julia's
Eye. That is. All three of the last Spanish films I've seen. One is someone who gets their eyes cut out. Another one is about a clown who burns skulls his face and goes around killing people with machete. And then this one with, pretty horrific, splattery-esque violence.
Royal Tenenbaums.
No, exactly.
Needle in the Hay stuff.
Yeah. And it basically starts more like a horror film, really, because these people are monsters. This guy, Malamadre, who is leading the revolution, is a big sort of bald white guy with a goatee. He looks a bit like Chopper.
Right.
And it actually owes quite a lot to Chopper in the way that the inside, the sort of claustrophobia of a prison and like
Bronson,
you know, how you got to keep what you're watching your back and stuff. And Bronson as well. Bronson also owes a lot to Chopper. So it sort of starts off as a horror film, really. And they are basically monsters. these people. And then it sort of morphs into something else. It almost morphs from a sort of standard drama, prison thriller sort of thing into essentially like a bit of a love story, really. Because he, you know, he has to keep up this pretense. Like, obviously, he's being tested at all. Malamadri is convinced by him. He's cleverer than everyone else. But all Malamadri's mates are suspicion of him.
Typical.
I mean, there's a lot of little like prison cliches.
A bit like Con Air.
It's sort of like a cross between En Prophet and Con Air, basically. Like, old story of, you know, the, let's hang around and understand the monsters and you will become one, that old cliche sort of works quite well. But, you know, we've seen, nothing is in this film that we haven't seen done before. But it doesn't really matter because it's told with such style and such an incredibly fast pace that is so exhilarating. You don't really care about the fact that the whole thing's incredibly implausible. And there's this big riot going on outside the prison because it's got into the press that a couple of people have died, and then all the relatives of the inmates are rioting outside. And they can see it on TV. They've blocked out all the cameras and stuff. He has the idea. He's like, no, you've got to keep one camera so when it comes to negotiate, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, but there's some great acting, and it's sort of very stylish camera work that sort of raises it above the bog standard prison drama stuff. And it's just great fun. And, you know, there are lots of unavoidable prison cliches that come with the territory, really. But, you know, you can overlook them and it romps through. And it's just a sort of, you know, very ballsy, very sort of masculine prison drama that, you know, rips along well. It's very entertaining. It's a bit silly at times, but you don't really mind. It's very gory. If you don't like sort of lots of people getting seriously injured with very blunt objects, basically.
But I think that you get, as we said earlier, that's attached to a very Spanish film now. I'm generalising Spanish cinema as gore.
Well, I mean, there has been, there's sort of certainly a lot of realism in the way that things hurt and stuff. I suppose that you could say that. But I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
So it
I thought it was going to be quite a gritty sort of psychological thing, but it was actually a lot more of a...
blockbustery.
You know, well, it's not blockbustery, but yeah, you can see a sort of next 3 days version. Again, it's that thing of an ordinary man being put into a very inordinary situation. So, yeah, I recommend it.
Good.
So, yeah, talking of prison films, we also... it's that point in the show where we read out your best and worsts.
That's a nice link, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and so the theme this week was...
prisons.
Yeah. I mean, that wasn't unintentional. but, yeah, so we'll read a couple of out. Do you want to start?
Yeah, I've got Jenny Womba, who's a recent... contributor.
She likes these.
And she does like this. And her favourite is The Great Escape and Escape from Alcatraz. Two great films. I love Escape from Alcatraz, Jenny. And she's only done the best here. I'm not sure if you got her worst, but there we are. They're two of her best.
Okay. Gary Hanna says, for a sick twist on prison movies, how about Cube? Not seen it in ages. Think I saw Francoise owes quite a bit to it. Oh, so, he can't spell. I think he means... think the Saw franchise, he's written Francis, owes quite a bit to it. Okay. Simon Dale's another one who says, A Prophet has to be up there for me, locked up at the bottom.
Okay, we've got Jason Coyle here, who says, A Man Escaped by Robert Bresson, understated movie and humane. We've done that. Tom Fordy, Ernest Goes to Jail, great one from you, Tom. Maggie Kruger, Shawshank and Brubaker are the best.
Yeah, I'm surprised not more people didn't say Shawshank, because that's the obvious
one. I've got some Shawshank here. And someone, Nia Child, says, all I'm saying, which I think is just a reply to someone else, she says, all I'm saying is Shawshank is overrated. I have to get it off my chest. I'm sorry. Scum is the best. Scum, fair enough. Good film.
There's one from Nicolette Vouvin, who says, Fortress, the 1992 film starring Christopher Lambert, is so bad it's good. Well, I haven't heard that, but usually when people say it's so bad it's good, it doesn't really sell it to me.
It doesn't sell it to me. Now, a lot of people said Prophet. I've missed out the top of this, but The Escapist and A Prophet were two great ones. And Doxy also says A Prophet. But someone, I mean, L. Wright says Best Out of Sight.
Well, I suppose it's a bit of prison, sort of. It's not set in a prison.
And he says, not worse, but vastly overrated, The Prophet. So he doesn't agree with The Prophet, and Nia doesn't agree with Shawshank Redemption.
Fair enough. Well, got another one for Prophet from Tina Estlin Page, but she says also Hunger. Brilliant, Steve McQueen,
that's very
Michael
good,
Fassbender.
And the birth of the next Bond, in my view.
Yeah, so, got some Bond news coming up as well.
yes, we do. Gary Brogdon also says in Prophet, and he says, what a fantastic film that is. He says, worst is Escape to Victory, which sort of leads in to Ant McGregor Clark, who thinks Mean Machine is the worst, which is sort of the remake of Escape to Victory.
Yeah.
And he thinks Stir Crazy is the best, Wilder and Pryor at their best. So there we are. Now, I must say, I haven't mentioned one tweet in The Name of the Father, which has got to be up there as one of the great prison films. Great prison film. Well, it's a great film.
One of your favourite films as well is in someone's worst here.
Yes.
Mark Hudson says The Shawshank Redemption, Cool Hand Luke and Escape from Alcatraz. Worst, The Lockup and Tango and Cash.
How dare you,
Which is one of your guilty pleasures, isn't it?
It is one of my massive guilty pleasures. And if you don't, I mean, it wasn't one of the best prison films is Tango and Cash. How dare you say that, Hudson? I'll eat you alive.
Someone else, a guy called Hayden, said The Rock, The Shawshank Redemption, Scum, and the original Assault on Precinct 13. I'm surprised that more people didn't say that. As well, Alien 3, someone mentioned.
Yeah.
That's set on a prison.
So,
it's not a prison movie, but it is set on a prison.
And The Escape is very good. I love Damien Lewis. He's very good in that. And so is Brian Cox. He's brilliant. And what was it? I was about to say another one. Oh, yeah, Con Air. It's essentially it's not great. It's, no one's mentioned it as their worst.
Yeah, well, but, I mean, it's not really best or worst. I'm more surprised people didn't put it in the best because people have a soft spot for The Rock and Con Air.
Yeah, and that's fair enough because that's a certain
I mean,
age.
The Rock is the one that I will, if I'm, like I have been a lot talking about Michael Bay with people, The Rock is the one that I will let you off on.
On Bay.
That's fine. You can like The Rock.
Okay.
As long as you don't like Transformers or Armageddon or Pearl Harbor.
Armageddon.
No.
And Pearl Harbor, two of my guilty pleasures.
Do you like Pearl Harbor?
No, I just like to... I love
you,
to hate
you
it.
You'd be the only person in the world who likes Pearl Harbor. I've never met anyone who said they like Pearl Harbor.
I know one other person who likes Pearl Harbor, and he's a Southampton football fan.
Oh, dear. Well, he's obviously got immaculate taste, but slightly lacking in judgment. Okay, so thanks very much for sending them all in. Sorry we couldn't read them all out. And do try and use the hashtag that we give you, because otherwise we won't be able to read them out. But we'll have another one of them next... for you next week.
Card.
Okay, competition time.
Yes.
Our winner last week got, what was it? The
Good Friday
and a pound.
Yeah.
So let's see if someone can do better than that. Let's just quickly remind ourselves of last week's accent.
I always said I'd get my land. I even bought a horse. Fine horse.
A fine horse. Yeah. Okay, so...
A little rule in acting, you know, sipping helium doesn't count as an Irish accent.
Yeah, that is true. Well, that is the dreadful Tom Cruise in The Dreadful Far and Away, which lots and lots of people got. I'm surprised so many people are seeing it, I've just said to Edward.
Yeah.
But well done, one of you. Is going to get picked out of the hat. Edward will do the honours.
Here you go.
And then you will win probably $100,000, but definitely a DVD. So let's see who's won this week.
Claire Firkins. Well done, Claire.
Claire Firkins. Well done, Claire.
Firkins with an F-I-R-K.
And how do you spell Claire? The French way or English way?
I think it's the English way.
With an I.
Yeah, that's the English way.
Yeah.
So the French way
is the incorrect way, as my mother would say. She's called Claire without an I.
Yeah, fair enough.
Don't let that...
That pronounced the same. Pronounced the same.
Yeah, come on.
Do you want to scratch it this week?
Yeah, why the hell not?
I don't usually.
So, Claire, if you haven't listened to the show before, well, obviously you have because you found the last one, but we will now scratch off a scratch card, and if you get three numbers the same, then you will win said amount of money. So £5,000, £100, £100,000, £25, £100,000, £100.
So you've got
three chances to get another £100,000.
Or another £100.
Another £100.
Or £225 or £25,000.
Who knows what you could get. Oh, there's
another
£25.
Oh, that's quite realistic.
£5,000.
This could be any of them.
Oh, £2. I thought it was 25.
Yeah, it could have been anything, that.
I'm very sorry about that, Claire.
Sorry, Claire.
But we'll pop that up to you with your DVD.
Is it?
Well, luckily for Claire, it's not. Although there are some stinking DVDs in here as well. Bride Wars, as we mentioned last week, has gone out of the bag since whenever people win it, they refuse to collect it, which is completely fair enough, I suppose.
It is fair enough.
So, what have we got this week? Ooh, American Beauty.
That's two good ones in a row.
An Oscar-winning film.
5 Oscars, including Best Pictures. 6 BAFTAs, including Best Film. Kevin Spacey, Annette Bening, American Beauty, .. Look closer.
Well done. So we'll pop that in the post to you. And don't worry if you're seething with jealousy at home that you didn't get picked, because now you've got another chance. So let's see if you
prick
can
your
guess.
Ears.
Exactly. Prick them up for this prick.
Pay strict attention to what I say, because I choose my words carefully and I never repeat myself.
No, you don't.
It doesn't even sound like he's trying.
I love the film, though. I love it. Yeah, I know you don't.
I mean, I don't hate it. It's just, you know, there's a certain actor in it who I need to be better in these sort of things. But yeah, I mean, that was someone trying to do an American accent. We'll give you that much, although it doesn't sound like it at all. Yeah. So if you think you know who that is, then you can get in touch at celluloidheroesradio.com/competition. You can also go to facebook.com/celluloidheroes, or you can tweet us on the Twitter @mycelluloidhero.
Very, very easy. So many ways.
So get in touch. Best of luck. And next week, you could be £100,000 richer.
Yeah, and the owner of a very nice DVD.
It's time for the movie news.
This is the news.
Surrounding film. Okay, so a bit of news I've scurried around to find. First up, one of my favourite actors of all time, Ed Norton. Is
the Bourne Legacy?
It could well be the Bourne villain and the Bourne Legacy.
Yeah.
Though the only thing that sort of I'm not excited about is the fact that it's not Damon, it's not Greengrass.
Yeah. So, but you know, it could be all right. You know, Renner is a good actor.
Yeah.
He's, I think, quite well cast. But you know, we'll see.
We'll see about that. So that there we are. And also, I mean, another exciting news for all you lovely Dark Knight fans: the Dark Knight Rises poster is up.
Yeah, it's a very sort of dark and apocalyptic, which I suppose is not really much of a surprise.
No.
But there's also a little sort of hint at the fourth dream level for you Inception fans.
Yeah.
If you like sort of big, crumbling Nolan-esque buildings and stuff. But it is a wicked poster. It's one of the
poster.
Best I've seen in a while.
Yeah, it's a very clever poster. So that's out. Two more things. So Arnie's back in the...
Oh, I heard this on the radio, but I didn't write it down. Yeah.
So he's back in the acting world.
Yeah.
And so what would you
remind
think
me what it?
If he was going to come back, what genre would he do?
A super action film.
Yeah. No, it's Western.
Oh yeah, he's going to be
a
sheriff.
He's a sheriff.
He is. Yeah.
I think it's called The Last Stand, and he plays a sheriff. I just hope he is playing an Austrian immigrant sheriff.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know,
I want your
clothes, a John Wayne.
Your boots and your horse.
It could be, you know, one accent to crown all accents, all bad accents. So we'll see about that. That'd be very interesting. I think he's also reprising his role as Terminator. Is that right?
Well, that, I think it depends how much he loses in the divorce.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Good luck, Arnold.
And if he doesn't do it, his son can always do it in a few years.
Yeah,
his love child. And finally, Spike Lee. He is practically on board to do the remake of Old Boy.
Oh yeah, well it's been going around for years and years that someone's going to remake Old Boy. I can't think why anyone would.
I know, it's a shame that anyone would.
Spike Lee's a weird one because he's sort of got the reputation as one of the greats, but he hasn't really made anything that great. I mean, I have a problem with pretty much all of his films. His masterpiece is supposed to be Malcolm X, and I don't really like it.
I haven't seen Malcolm X. I do like 25th Hour. I do like that film. And I do like Inside Man.
Yeah. What about Summer of Sam? Have you seen that?
No. In fact,
that's probably my favourite of his.
I think those are the only two films I've seen of his, to be fair. To be fair to the old guy.
Okay.
The oldish guy, some middle-aged guy.
Is that it for your ones?
So that's my
got
news.
One more?
That's my news.
Okay, well, I've got some exciting stuff.
So you can do the Bond, aren't
Bond.
You?
Bond's 23. Yeah. You know how much I love Bond.
Yeah.
And some casting news. Finally, we've got Naomi Harris, who's going to be playing Moneypenny. So first black Moneypenny.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, get with it, guys. It's 2011. And who else have we got? We've got Ralph Fiennes, who, according to the Huffington Post, is going to be playing Q.
That's an extraordinary
Which I can't
one.
Really see. But the villain is going to be Javier Bardem.
He was born to play a Bond villain.
Exactly, yeah. So hopefully, you know, we've seen what he can do in the villainy role.
And maybe his wife...
Hopefully he'll be camping it up as much as Sam Mendes will allow him to.
Yeah. Maybe his wife will pop in as one of the Bond girls.
Yeah, well, I doubt it. Yeah. She's a bit too old, isn't she? I think you have to be about 16
Actually,
these days.
Talking about old.
Gemma Arterton was about 19 when she did
it. Yeah, she's so attractive. Talking about Bond, talking about growing old and Latino actors / actresses, I flicked on Grown Ups the other day.
Yeah.
Because it was on.
The worst film of 2010.
Telly Lloyd here is stinker of the year. Yeah. I completely understand why. I mean, it's absolutely terrible. But Salma Hayek still got it.
Yeah, well, one of us is going to be having to see Kevin James is the Zookeeper.
Oh, is that
soon.
Out? Is that,
well,
that
out in a couple of weeks?
That's sort of got my name.
There's a huge billboard for it in my local multiplex that I keep tripping over when I walk out.
I think I read somewhere that some animal activists has been sort of campaigning against that film.
What? Because, you know, even the fact that these are digital animals is so insulting to the original animals.
Yeah, how dare you say Sly Stallone's a lion? He's a stallion.
Dear.
Get
this
it right.
Is ridiculous. Yeah. Anyway, so that's Bond. Another bit of interesting news. Little Miss Sunshine co-directors Valerie Faris and Jonathan Dayton have announced plans for their new film, which is called He Loves Me, reuniting with Paul Dano.
Okay.
And also on board are Elliot Gould.
Oh, I love Elliot.
And with his massive eyebrows.
Yeah.
He's aged a lot recently,
Has
Elliot
he?
Gould. Yeah.
Oh, well, he's getting old.
And Steve Coogan.
Ooh.
If he calms down in time after his little rant on Newsnight.
I haven't seen that yet. Where can we see that? On YouTube?
It's on the Big British Castle website.
Was he like, don't you ever, 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 ever do that again? Or I will never, never. If you don't get that reference, watch Mid-Morning Matters episode 10.
Yeah. But yeah, it's almost that bad. Yeah, he gets pretty hurt. But anyway, because he's got a lot of pent-up aggression after the dismal failure of Hamlet 2.
Yeah, but to be honest, I mean, again, that was on quite a lot while I was unemployed, and it's not terrible. It's just something you've got to, I suppose, got to be unemployed so you can watch it a few times. But it's not overly bad. It just wasn't received well. But maybe his accent will be in a future competition because it's not great.
Okie doke. We've also got some more details of the new Disney version of The Lone Ranger.
Yes, Johnny
Which we
Depp.
Did mention a while ago with Johnny Depp. And the leading lady is going to be Britain's very own Ruth Wilson, who I absolutely love. People will know her from... She did some amazing TV sort of specials with Stephen Polycroft, but people will probably know her better from Luther.
Okay.
She plays Alice, the sort of psychopath
in
Luther. She's really, really great.
That's great for her.
And Arnie Hammer's in it as well.
Playing Hammer.
Yes, you do. He plays the Winklevi in The Social Network.
Yeah.
And Depp isn't actually the Lone Ranger. Depp's playing Tonto.
Okay.
Okay. Also, some remake news. Yeah, yeah. Some remake news. Evil Dead.
Yeah.
Really? Are they really going to do this? I mean, Sam Raimi's been talking a lot, like, in the last few years about maybe doing a fourth. But it looks as if the Evil Dead, the original editor, Bob Murawski, is going to go back and make a remake. But he wants to make it really low budget and sort of keep the sort of punk aesthetic of the original.
I think all
which
zombie films have to be
raises the question, why?
Yeah.
Why bother? there's also Kristen Wiig's new project has been given the green light. She's been trying to get it on the go for ages, but obviously now that she's made, apparently it's the 7th highest grossing rom-com of all time, Bridesmaids.
Well, Bridesmaids.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not surprised with inflation.
Yeah, and it's good. And this is a film called Imogen that she's been trying to get off the ground for years. It's about a playwright who tries to win back her ex-boyfriend by pretending to commit suicide. So an interesting premise.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot to look forward to there, I suppose.
Okay.
Let's do a bit of Hobbit Watch. Why not?
Yeah.
Hobbit Watch!
Quiet, Mr. Gandalf. You'll scare him off.
Oh, sorry.
So if you're on the Facebook, it's a sort of social network on that interweb, then follow Peter Jackson, and he's put up the second part, the long-awaited part of the production blog diary video blog thing that he's doing. And it's sort of to end the first block of shooting, which started on the 11th of April. And now they're having a break until the 5th of September. So there's lots of interviews with cast members. We get to see some great pictures that are all on CelluloidHeroesRadio.com. Mm-hmm. And yeah, great pictures of Dory, Nori and Orly and Kitty and Philly. We get to see some great footage of them in these fleets of helicopters going around the South Island location scouting. And just, you really get the feel. Anyone who's worried that they're going to muck this up, just watch this blog and you can just see and smell the enthusiasm coming off Peter Jackson. He loves it. And I love his style so much. He just absolutely...
I love that sort of quip he says, how it's like he's in pre-production, post-production and production all at the same time.
When everyone... The camera goes around asking people and they're like, oh yeah, on my holiday, I'm going to get on the drink and stuff.
James Nesbitt's going to go to Pebble Beach to play a bit of golf.
Yeah, he's going to see his mate, I think he said.
And also his...
Show off my new hairline.
Yeah, his hairline, it's done wonders.
Yeah,
it does the same for Wazza.
Yeah.
And one more thing. Andy Serkis is turning into Peter Jackson physically.
And the old fat one as well.
Yeah. But you saw a great little snippet of him as Gollum in the water, which is also fantastic.
Yeah, he did all his stuff before they even started shooting the first block.
Really?
So it's just nice to see it all coming together. Mm. I'm so excited about it. And Christopher Lee is now, in a bit of side news, confirmed to be turning up at some point.
If he survives the long air flight.
Yeah, let's do some trailers.
This is Trailer Trash.
Okay, so the most exciting trailer of the week is obviously the full trailer of Tintin.
Yeah.
And the boat.
Tintin and the ship. The Adventures of Tintin, The Secret of the Unicorn.
The Secret of the Unicorn.
So we see a little bit more of our characters. We get to see Haddock.
In all his prime.
We get to see the full reveal of Thompson and Thompson.
Yeah.
You can definitely tell which one's which.
Yeah.
And you can see the sort of style that Moffat and Wright and Cornish have gone for. It reminds me actually of the old cartoons. It looks quite sort of childlike and playful. Yeah. It looks astonishing.
It does look absolutely astounding. And also, you can just see the emotion in the character's face, especially Haddock.
Yeah.
This really, really is a homage to motion capture, that film.
The only thing that looks slightly out of place is Snowy, Milu, just because he's the only thing that isn't sort of motion captured. So he does look a bit funny, but... the stuff on the boat and the water, the way the water moves,
and
just
it goes into the sand.
Unreal, yeah.
And
so if you haven't seen that, go to celluloidheroesradio.com/trailers and definitely get it up to 1080p because it deserves it.
It does, yeah. And also, I mean, you also get to see a bit of, you get to get a feel of a bit of Cornish's and Moffat's wit.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
With the sort of, I don't know what it's land.
Yeah,
quip. I won't say any more than that. So that's out. The Sherlock's new film. Sherlock does this
Holmes,
and that never.
A Game of Shadows.
That's right. Again, I mean, to be honest, I wasn't impressed with when the first film trailer came out, but I did enjoy it. So let's hope the same thing happens.
You get to see a bit of Moriarty.
Yeah,
you get to see Noomi Rapace is playing this sort of tarot card reader sort of thing. We don't get to see any of Stephen Fry.
No.
Not yet.
I thought he was going to be Moriarty.
No, he plays Mycroft.
Mycroft, the brother.
The brother, yeah. The more intelligent older brother.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a great character if you know the books.
I just hope it doesn't go for this, what I will now call the sort of the P.W. Anderson Three Musketeer syndrome.
Yeah.
Of turning...
Well, there are some worrying things in the trailer because there are things that look like they're scene for scene from the first one. There's them running through with slow motion things that, and Guy Ritchie was very restrained from all his stupid slow mo bollocks that he is so used to in the last film. There was just enough of it to make it sort of watchable.
Yeah.
But if there's, you know, if there's much more than there is in the trailer, it's going to become a problem.
They'll use the same thing as like, I'm going to do this, and then I do it, and then I'll show you I do it in real time.
And then I'm going to cook him in the bollocks.
Yeah. And he'll say, ouch. And then the other thing they do is they use the same line. And when he goes, get that thing out of your face. And it's like, it's not my face, it's my hand.
Get that thing in your hand out of my face.
Which is a good line in the first one. But
is that in the first one?
Yeah, it is.
I don't remember that.
In some way, shape or form.
Yeah.
Maybe different limbs.
A couple more things are Creature, which is a new sort of low-budget thing, like horror film that's supposed to be getting lots of attention. I think the basic premise is some young people go fishing in an alligator-infested swamp and there's a creature.
Which isn't an alligator.
Yeah, and it's
an alligator too.
It attacks them and they run around going, ooh!
And one by one they get killed off.
Yeah. Oh, God!
Until the fittest, the most attractive person, well, the second most attractive person, because the most attractive person dies straight away. The sort of more sort of rounded character, but still very chiseled, survives.
Yeah.
And talking about creatures,
yeah,
I've got another trailer for you.
Yeah.
Which I think this is the film you will be looking forward to the most this year. It's called Jack and Jill.
Ooh. Do they go up a hill?
Is that excited about this?
Well, I don't know anything about it.
I'll tell you what it's about. It's about, let's say Jack is played by Adam Sandler.
Oh, it doesn't start well.
And he has an annoying twin sister called Jill.
Oh, my God.
Played by Adam Sandler.
What?
And Jill has to come around for Christmas every day, every year, for a few days. And Jack hates it because they fight all the time. And they hate each other, but they love each other.
So it's like Norbit. Adam Sandler is doing everything he can to ruin his career in the same way that Eddie Murphy is.
Exactly. I mean, oh, God.
How do they...
At Christmas.
I just can't imagine the pitches where this takes place. Like, how about I play Jack and then Jill, both of them at the same time? Like, brilliant, Adam.
We'll throw it as chucking money at him.
What is his problem?
So that
it's so frustrating that he did that one amazing film as well, because otherwise you could just dismiss it all as rubbish.
Yeah, it's true. I think, unfortunately, he's just...
I do have a few Guilty Pleasures in there as well, though, I have to say.
Well, like
50
Gilmore.
First Mates.
I don't
like Happy Gilmore. Mr. Deeds, I prefer to Happy Gilmore. Little Nicky was rubbish.
Little Nicky was terrible. I think that's when I learned.
I wonder if Steve Buscemi will turn up in it.
I wonder. Because he does turn up.
Like that, in Grown Ups. He does turn up in
Grown Ups.
You're
probably wondering how I managed to watch it for that long, but I just happened to switch on. Maybe I didn't.
Yeah.
And there's one more trailer.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of trailers I sort of passed by has been this bits and bobs, but this trailer. I'm going to point out. It's called Family Tree. Yeah. And
I think it's got
Hope Davis.
Yeah.
It's basically about a mundane family who they don't get on. You know, typical like let's break. You know, we should really divorce, but we're not. And Hope Davis is the wife, and she has an affair. And while she's having an affair, she slipped with this fat handyman.
Mm-hmm.
She knocks herself in the head and has amnesia, and then wakes up, and then they might. And she only can remember as they got married. So it's sort of it just looks below par. It's one of those films trying to be sort of clever and witty and a take on the state of the American family, or the general family, the Western family. And I don't think it will work, but I think it might get quite a lot of, there goes my pen, quite a lot of attention and build up. But
it just doesn't
do it for me.
Okay. Well, this one, there's another one which is quite similar, which I'll quickly talk about, called Amigo with Chris Cooper. Have you seen that?
It looks like a
very smug like tale of how America oppressed the Filipino people when they colonized it in the early 1800s, something like that. It looks pretty sanctimonious from the trailer, and it's also shot in this like really weird sort of digital, like it doesn't look at all like film. It looks like a sort of TV HBO movie of the week sort of thing. And one quick two more I'll just quickly talk about. The Inbetweeners trailer's the full thing's out.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that. I'll
look so if
that.
You like jokes about
poo.
Reproductive organs and stuff.
Poo and sex and penises.
You'll like that. I did sort of smirk a little bit. I never really got the Inbetweeners. Loads of my mates love it. It's just something, once in a while, something comes along you just don't get. I just don't get it.
Fair enough. I mean,
and this is quite exciting. If you're, unfortunately, we couldn't do Potter. We really wanted to do it this week.
Yeah.
But essentially, I was too lazy to go to a Sunday morning screening in Leicester Square. So that is sort of my fault, and I do apologise. But if you are going on Friday, you will see the trailer to The Dark Knight Rises, which I saw. I will not tell you how, because someone could lose their job over it. But someone let me watch it the other day. And it's, you know, it doesn't really reveal too much. All I'll say is Liam Neeson has a prominent part to play.
Mm.
So, that's it for the movie news.
Big one, that.
It was a question on your lips, and now it's dribbling down your chin. You simply have to know, or you'll be straight back on the gin. The coronet is zeitgeist of the room that we are in. What's in the studio bin?
There's not much in the bin. But next to the bin, there's a pizza box and two empty red top milk cartons.
Disgusting.
Ugh.
What's in the studio bin now?
Okay, disgusting stuff, red top milk. Nothing to do with me.
No.
Right, I'll talk a little bit about a film called Bobby Fischer Against the World. Yet another documentary. Yeah. It's been the most documentary heavy
for many a year.
And so this is directed by a lady called Liz Garbus, and it basically tells the story of the chess prodigy Bobby Fischer, who had a very famous match against a Russian called Spassky in 1972, so the height of the Cold War, basically. So it symbolized a lot more than a chess game, one of those
a
sort
bit
of
like
things.
Forrest Gump ping pong back.
I mean, and that's what I thought it was going to be, you know, a little bit of background and then how, you know, chess became very, very popular. But that's not really, I mean, that's part of it, certainly, but it's not really the whole thing. So Bobby Fischer was just a young sort of working class guy who grew up in Brooklyn. His mother was pretty much a genius. She was called Regina, and she was basically Regina the genius. Exactly.
She got bullied.
She was a communist. She was also Jewish. She was a welder, a nurse, a telephone operator. She had a PhD in hematology and stuff. Very smart lady.
Yeah.
And this sort of tells the beginning of the story about how Bobby got into chess and at the age of about six when he moved from Chicago to Brooklyn and
became Brooklyn, where they have all those sort of chess balls in the
park. I mean, it's a very sort of
Bart Simpson
exactly where once. All the sort of Jewish people in Brooklyn hang out. And so it basically he became a prodigy at the age of 15. He invented the sort of four move checkmate. He was unbelievable. He became the US champion at 14. Used to just go around thrashing all the grandmasters. He was just an absolute one-off, mental. No one could really understand it.
They
tell the story of how he got to the age of 13, playing forever and ever and ever. And I mean, he wasn't as exceptionally good. And then one day he just clicked and just couldn't.
That's very interesting.
Couldn't lose.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, you get some good
archive.
Good, some talking heads and stuff. You get Malcolm Gladwell turns up, which is quite interesting, although he's only in it for about 30 seconds. You also get, you know, all the people that organised the championship. But basically what it leads up to is this match that was held in Iceland in 1972. And he sort of has all the characteristics of someone who's very uncomfortable with his own sort of body and stuff. He didn't like being in crowds. The spotlight was very much on him. He hated the way that he was being used by the media to symbolize something else. He didn't turn up to the airport to go to the original 1972 match and stuff. Eventually they got him on the airport.
they got him to the airport
after him running off a few times. And then
Bobby, come back.
You know how they had the two clocks, and once the first person plays their move, they press the clock. And so he doesn't turn up to the first one. He turns up. I think you have an hour to play your move. So Spassky moves his first pawn, clicks the button, and everyone's just sitting there waiting. And then you begin to see the first sort of signs of his sort of quite a strange side to him, like paranoia. He loses the first game by making a massive blunder that was completely uncharacteristic. And then he sort of blames it on the fact that the cameras are too noisy. And so they say, oh, we'll get rid of the cameras. The next time they say, oh, we'll get rid of the crowd, we'll get rid of everything. And this was huge. Like, the one thing that everyone at the time compared it to was like Ali Frazier. It was that big. People were watching it in Times Square. And because he refused all the cameras, people were basically watching a chessboard with animated to see like the state of the board. And you have this weird thing of all these people packed into bars just watching this static, looks like a sort of teletext test card thing. It's really quite odd.
This
basically goes from the story of how he became completely obsessed with chess as a form of escapism, And, you know, after there's a story of how he realized his father wasn't his real father, blah, 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 blah. And then it sort of turns into a different film, really, because the actual chess stuff goes on for a long, long time. The chess bit. I mean, it's a bit like the Casino Royale poker game. It just goes on and on. Mm. And they do a good job of sort of keeping it interesting. But then, and then there's this weird thing of he starts beating Spassky, and then Spassky starts claiming that the Americans are using radiation and stuff. And the overwhelming thing is, like, these chess people are all a bit bonkers, aren't they?
Yeah.
And this is one of the promo clips that they give it. And this is them talking about how these people whose lives are completely obsessed with chess find it quite hard to assimilate into the real world.
If you understand that in the first move of a chess game, each player has 20 possible moves. If you multiply 20 by 20, that means there are 400 different possible chess positions after the first move.
The tree becomes with a lot of branches, you know, that you start with one move, and on that one move there are several options. Then all of a sudden it becomes a jungle.
The number of all positions that theoretically can occur in the game of chess is something like 10 with 45 zeros. It's like the number of atoms in the solar system.
You're trying to anticipate what your opponent might do, and you don't know what he might do, so you're thinking of all the different possibilities. A good chess player is paranoid on the board, but then if you take that paranoia to real life, it doesn't play so well. You end up seeing your real world according to the confines of chess.
Okay, so that's basically, you know, I mean, oh, this is animated with some quite nice sort of drawings and stuff.
I must say the music also feels quite paranoid.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the use of music's actually done very well, and it's very straight. You know, there's no narration. It's just talking heads, old footage with people that knew him, people that were around him. Mm. And the best stuff is with all the old chess masters, because it is quite hard for people to grasp just what a prodigy he was, really, because there are some times where they talk about this one move did, and there's all these people going like, and it was just the most beautiful chess you ever saw. And, you know, he was like poetry. You know, he was just flying all over the place. And it's like, now, that is quite easy to illustrate with someone like Zidane or Federer. But, like, when you've got two people basically sitting and watching each other for 40 minutes and then moving a bit of wood around, it's quite hard to sort of, you know, send that. And then basically, so I thought that's what it would all be like. But then it becomes a different film, really, and becomes about his breakdown and how his mind that was so focused on chess, you know, if you don't want to know how the game ends, cover your ears for the next 5 seconds. He wins. Okay, you can listen now. So his life changes after the end of this huge match, but then he decides that he doesn't really want to play chess anymore because he can't deal with the pressure. And he basically goes into this spiral of mental illness and then becomes severely paranoid, schizophrenic, basically. He just goes absolutely mental. Like he goes it just starts joining all these weird cults and stuff. He thinks that all these Jewish conspiracies, becomes a like vehement anti-Semite despite being Jewish himself. Yeah. And thinks that there's all these Jewish world conspiracies. He gets shipped around a bit and then eventually makes a comeback in like 1992 during the in Hungary against Spassky again. And I won't say what happens, but basically it was during the Hungarian War, and in playing this match, he essentially became exiled from the States. And there's these interviews that they play of him after 9/11 going like, yeah, like this is America getting what they want, like rejoicing and in all these people dying and stuff. And he was, but the interesting thing is all these chess genii over the last sort of 100 years, so many of them have descended into paranoid delusion, because it's just something about the way that their mind works. As the guy was saying in the clip, you have to be completely paranoid on a chessboard because it's all about thinking thousands of moves ahead. But in real life, you can't do that because you don't, you know, it's not like you can map it out. So these people just can't take it and they flip out. And it's a really good sort of, it's more a film about mental illness than it is about chess. Mm. And it's well put together and it's nicely paced. And you know, for a film about chess,
it's really interesting.
It's amazing, you know. Yeah. It's very hard to captivate a sort of, a, you know, an audience of 200 members of the film press. Yeah. No one was bored. No one was fidgeting. I think my general consensus was that everyone really liked it. And it was great. I hope it gets a nice big opening weekend. I don't know if it'll get a very wide release, but if you see it and you like well-made documentaries, it's another one to put on the list
and
for this year.
My documentary radar is very boring, but was it cinematic or was it something?
Well, that's one problem with it, really. I mean, it does look a little bit like a BBC Two Sunday night
sort of.
Yeah, you know, which you know, but
Talking
I mean, not everything
they
can
finally
be.
Finally, did Seve on last Sunday?
Oh, did they? Yeah. I missed that. But you know, it's not Senna. It's not cinematic like that, and it's not you know as much of a personal story. But it is fascinating, and for someone who didn't know anything about the subject matter, really. I think it's a generational thing, you know. People who were born in the 70s will obviously he was the most famous guy on the planet, basically. Yeah. And there's all this way that the American government used it to sort of cover up Watergate. There's a good news clip in there where they go like, and later on, more on the unfolding Watergate scandal. But for now, Bobby Fischer.
Yeah,
it's really interesting, really great.
Okay. Hey, this is Philip Seymour Hoffman, and you are listening to Celluloid. I forgot it already.
Okay. Right, we'll just do the DVD top 10 and then we'll take you on home. In at number 10
is Due Date, the filling
in the hangover sandwich. Number 9
is the whole grain bread. One part of the whole grain bread is the hangover.
Okay. Number 8, Hall Pass.
Oh, pretty dreary.
Steve Merchant, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, he's taking mushrooms, that's what he's doing.
Yeah, sure. Number 7, Season of the Witch. Neither of us have seen that.
Yeah.
6, Paul, which is doing very well on DVD.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people have... It's gaining a lot more attention in its sort of home entertainment form than it did in the theatres,
yeah,
I think.
Which is great.
Lots of people have been tweeting about it and stuff recently. Number 5, down from number 2, Yogi Bear, which is a pretty much unashamedly money-spinning resurrection of the classic cartoon with Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
Number 4, Drive Angry. We didn't see this, did we?
No. But
It came out on a week where there were two... Well... This very week, they both came out, and it's same time as number 3, Another Hood,
which you saw. And look, you complain about all these films you see, and I drove back. The way I come back into London from the M4, and you see, I remember that when Another Hood cinema came out, when it came out of cinema, it had a trailer there, and it's got the same spot for the DVD, and it's the worst film I've ever seen in my life.
Is it actually?
It's terrible.
Is it definitely the worst of the year you've seen?
I think you'd try and kill yourself if you saw it.
Okay. Right then.
But I don't. Don't kill yourself. I'll watch it with you just in case you try.
If it's worse than if it is it because it can't be as insulting as Transformers.
I think no, it's insulting in different contexts. Insulting. Yeah. It's insulting to comedy, and it's insulting to British cinema.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll rent it. Number 2, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1, which is in there for no surprising reasons there. No. It's about to smash all the records this week. And
we'll
I would really, really like it if Harry Potter does better than Pirates of the Caribbean and Transformers. I really hope it will.
It will. It will double them both. Everyone.
No, I don't know, mate.
It will. Everyone's
well, let's hope
it
does because it's got some great British actors. You know, love or hate Harry Potter, you can't help but admire what they've done with the second half of these films.
Yeah.
I still personally think they should have given them to Terry Gilliam and maybe no one would have seen them. but, you know, that's just me. Incidentally, the first one, part one, is okay. Don't watch it again if you've seen it. It doesn't offer anything else. The animation stuff's is good, but, you know, it's half a film.
Well, might as well, we're there. I again, on the weekend, I was on my own on Saturday. It's very sad.
Oh.
But I watched a film. So I'll watch something tonight. And this happens when I turn on the telly that Half-Blood Prince is about to start. And I watched the whole thing. And it's great.
Yeah, it's one of the best.
It's my second best after Prisoner
of Azkaban.
And, you know...
Oh, Goblet of Fire is all right as well. That's
I thought it was a bit cheesy and a bit longer. Yeah. But Half-Blood Prince, Dumbledore, he's a dude, man. He's a dude. a great, great wizard. And Snape, I mean, great. It's great. It's great.
It's great.
It's great.
Okay. So. And new entry at number 1, The Adjustment Bureau.
Siboff.
I quite liked it. Liked Emily Blunt in it. Matt Damon was fine. It was a good adaptation of a Philip K. Dick thing. It wasn't trying to be too dark. It had its nice, colourful tone. I thought it was fine.
Mm.
Okay. So that is it for the show this week.
Yeah.
So thanks very much for listening again. We'll just give you a quick reminder of this week's accent.
Pay strict attention to what I say, because I choose my words carefully and I never repeat myself.
Okay, we will pay closer attention to what you say. So if you think you know who that is, go to celluloidheroesradio.com/competition. You can also go there for all the latest news and trailers and features, comment. We have writers from all over the world writing pretty interesting stuff. So some great check stuff. It out. So you'd be a fool not to.
Yeah. And one final thing. It's the 140th Open Championship this weekend.
Excited about tomorrow. That?
Extremely excited. Extremely excited. Okay. We'll hopefully get a British winner. But, you know, you Americans, you can win one as well because we're winning all the majors. And
sure. Any good telly stuff that have you seen this week?
Well, it's
there's been a few
final.
Dramas that I've all I've missed them all. I missed the.
I watched The Night Watch, which was Sarah Waters' latest novel to be turned on the screen. If you don't know who Sarah Waters is, she writes about
erotic, period drama,
lesbian theme, lesbian and gay themes, mainly Victorian. But The Night Watch is set in the Blitz. It's very explicit. But it's very well acted. It's got Claire Foy, it's got Anne Wilson-Jones, and Claire Foy, as I mentioned, Jodie Whittaker, and Harry Treadaway. And it's actually very good.
Yeah, okay. There's also a great thing on BBC at the moment called What's Inside a Pop Song or something like that, or Secrets of the Pop Song, which I really recommend.
So does it break down?
It's sort of Guy Chambers, who wrote all the Robbie Williams stuff. Then he has a guest every week, so he had Rufus Wainwright and to write a ballad in the first one, and then he had Mark Ronson in the last one, and then it concludes with the power ballad, the anthem next week. So it had the ballad, the introduction single sort of thing. Yeah. And it's just really interesting if you're into music.
He's quite a witty guy as well, isn't he?
Guy Chambers. Yeah. I don't know, he doesn't come across terrifically well. Oh, right. I mean, he doesn't come across badly, but he's just a bit apathetic. Yeah. But it's very interesting to see, and they do have talking heads with like people like Neil Tennant and Boy George and Brian May and, you know, lots and lots of very successful songwriters. It's quite interesting to see how they write all the like Girls Aloud ones and stuff as well. Like if you're into sort of, you know, the inner workings of music, then check it out. Anyway, thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you with Potter next week.
Potter. Bye.
For all the latest movie news, for previous reviews, or to get in contact with the show, visit celluloidheroesradio.com.